This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Thursday, October 16th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, we continue our series on rural issues and the presidential candidates. Today, we approach the touchy subject of immigration. Also have a forecast coming up from meteorologist Ed Keezer. First, today's news. A dispute over ballot language for the Illinois Constitutional Convention referendum went before an appellate panel yesterday with some questions remaining over the ruling. The Associated Press says the panel could rule as early as today over whether a new ballot will be needed to correct mistakes in the language asking voters if they want a convention to draw up a new state constitution. But Lieutenant Governor Pat Quinn, who's a party to the suit, said yesterday in Urbana that the appellate panel has already given its ruling and that the Illinois Supreme Court should decide.
They held late this afternoon that the circuit court judge who declared the language to be false and misleading declared part of a statute unconstitutional in Illinois, and that requires by court rule that the case go directly to the Illinois Supreme Court. So we'll be back and forth, whatever it takes. This is a fundamental right case.
Quinn came to the U of I yesterday to take part in a debate on the referendum. The dispute is over ballot language that Quinn and other referendum supporters say is false and misleading. A circuit judge agreed, then ruled that election officials should hand out notices to voters explaining the mistake. Quinn says there should be an entirely new ballot with the corrected language. But state elections officials say there's not enough time to get those ballots ready by Election Day. The ballot language in question included the instruction that not voting on the Constitutional Convention referendum was the same as a no vote. That language was based on an obsolete statute. Lawyers are using a new law in Illinois to get cash for their clients who wrongfully spent time in prison. Robert Wildebor has more.
Yesterday, attorneys filed the first petitions for certificates of innocence. Those certificates would allow the wrongfully convicted to get compensation from the state. Prior to this, wrongfully imprisoned people had to get a pardon from the governor before they would see any money.
They should not have had to ask the state to pardon them. We should be asking them, would you please pardon us?
Representative Mary Flowers sponsored the new legislation.
If the governor didn't find fit that they were worthy of a pardon, despite the fact they are innocent, they'll never get their money.
In fact, some innocent people have been waiting years for Governor Rod Blagojevich to pardon them. This summer, Blagojevich vetoed the law creating certificates of innocence, but lawmakers overrode that veto last month. I'm Robert Wildebor.
Authorities in suburban Chicago say a medical evacuation helicopter may have clipped a wire before it crashed and burned, killing four people, including a 13-month-old girl. Police Sergeant Rob Wallers in the Aurora Police Department says the helicopter was transporting the girl to a Chicago hospital when it went down minutes before midnight. Officials from the National Transportation Safety Board are investigating the crash. Assistant Fire Chief John Lehman says the guy wire came from a 750-foot-tall radio tower. He adds there is some concern about the tower's structural integrity and engineers are evaluating it. The helicopter was operated by Air Angels. The company's CEO, Jim Adams, says the helicopter's pilot didn't report any mechanical problems before the crash and weather wasn't an issue. An organization that encourages the study of free markets and principles of Western civilization says moving off the University of Illinois campus won't discourage its mission. The Academy on Capitalism and Limited Government holds its second conference today, just days after agreeing to operate independently of the U of I. Faculty had raised concerns that its structure might restrict topics to those with a certain point of view, creating an undue conservative political influence. But Acting Executive Director Tom O'Loughlin says the new relationship is simply a matter of changing administrative language, as it sets up a fund to handle donor grants within the U of I Foundation. O'Loughlin says the Academy's primary allegiance lies with the Urbana campus.
And I think most of our donors share that view. So the donor gifts, donor grants, would be made first and foremost with donor intent in mind, and then hopefully the school would feel that this research, this curriculum modification, this curriculum addition would be a welcome addition.
O'Loughlin says in a worst-case scenario, faculty members or the chancellor can reject any donation if they felt the funds would be unsuitable for research. He says the academy could then opt to direct its funds to another campus, but adds that's merely speculation. The academy plans to relocate to the U of I Research Park. Its second annual conference is today. The keynote speaker is Carl Schramm, the president and CEO of the Kauffman Foundation. Many people, including watchdog groups and the media, are taking a flight from responsibility when they speculate on the future of Social Security. Those comments come from a Bush administration official warning of dire projections for the program in 20 years, eating up about 16% of taxable wages. Charles Blauhaus is the deputy assistant to the president for economic policy. He spoke at the U of I yesterday and suggests Social Security is taking a backseat to other high-profile issues.
Whether we're talking about the cost of our exertions in Iraq, to the practical distance between the political parties with respect to income tax policy, the fiscal consequences of population aging, by contrast, are as great as any fiscal challenge our government has faced down in the past. And if they're not addressed, they will threaten our children and grandchildren with a lower standard of living than we have been privileged to enjoy in our lives. And to deny this reality, in my view, is a dereliction of public duty.
Blauhaus says the issues of federal spending and revenue are bound to produce a diverse viewpoint, but he says analysts have to clarify the choices before us and keep elected officials from avoiding difficult issues. Urbana City officials think downtown is ripe for growth, and they want to make sure cars have a place to park when that growth happens. City leaders had the results of a study on parking after concerns that high-demand areas of downtown have relatively few parking places. They released that study at a public presentation yesterday. Patrick Pioletti of the city's Public Works Department says Urbana's problems with parking aren't much different from Champaign or many other cities its size. Available spaces aren't necessarily close to where people want to park.
That core area of downtown where we need short-term customer spaces, where we're a little lax, and the periphery, Lincoln Square showed a surplus and the lots around Lincoln Square, as well as a couple of lots on the north side of downtown.
Pioletti says the study recommends more angle parking instead of parallel parking, signage changes, and a bit more leniency for parking violators, as long as they're not repeat offenders. He says it also estimates the cost of a new parking deck at $9 million, something Urbana may not be able to afford for a while. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. We continue our series on rural America and the presidential race. It's a joint project with AM 580 and public radio stations across the country. In Texas, people are used to the idea of Mexican immigrants working in the state's agricultural industries. But in the meatpacking houses on the high plains of the Texas Panhandle, there are some new languages heard these days, along with the usual English and Spanish. Mark Hazlett reports from Amarillo.
Immigration is one of the central issues in the 2008 presidential elections. In the Texas Panhandle, immigration dynamics are changing. Last summer, thousands of expatriate Burmese gathered to mark the 20th anniversary of the 8888 uprising against that country's military government. One such gathering took place in Amarillo. Min Aung participated in that uprising and fled after it failed. Today, he is case manager for Catholic Family Service in Amarillo. His clients are Burmese refugees.
We have Burmese community growing in Amarillo, but we don't have anyone to help them. They need help, and so I came.
Refugees from Burma, Somalia, and Sudan reflect a shift in the foreign-born workforce of the Panhandle. They come here to work in the meatpacking industry. Texas Panhandle meatpackers process as many as 20,000 head of cattle daily. A December 2006 federal immigration raid at the JBS Swift facility in the town of Cactus temporarily crippled operations. Celestino Rivera of United Food and Commercial Workers Local 540 remembers.
JBS had to recruit people fast to be able to fill the spots of, I think there was 300 plus that were actually deported or detained. In addition to the evening crew, which was not even touched unless they were working a double, those employees didn't show up to work. So at the end of the week, I'm going to venture out to say that it was probably 700 to 800 people missing.
That's out of around 2,400 workers, Rivera said, about a third of the employees. Imelda Maldonado, also with the union, said that Swift's effort to replace the staff with native-born workers was unsuccessful.
Well, before they brought in the refugees, they started bringing in a lot of U.S. citizens, and they're not there.
Former SWIFT workers have sued the company. They allege that management knowingly hired illegal workers before the raid. SWIFT denies the charges. The case is in the federal court system. Punishing rogue employers is a popular political platform plank. Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama.
We do need to crack down on employers as well who are actively exploiting and taking advantage of undocumented labor that they feel they can do whatever they want with. Not paying overtime, not paying minimum wage. That is also something that we have to crack down on.
Many Republicans agree. In 2008, Arizona and Oklahoma passed sanctions against such employers. Republicans led those initiatives. The Texas legislature, which meets biennially, did not convene in 2008. The tone for the 2009 session will be set, in part, by the results of November's presidential election. For the Public Radio Rural Issues Project, I'm Mark Haslett in Amarillo, Texas.
We've broken free of the rain in Illinois and Indiana, and our meteorologist Ed Kieser says there may be a chance of a shower tomorrow afternoon, but it'll be a mainly dry and cool period, actually seasonably cool. For today, in northern and central Illinois, mostly sunny. In northern and central Indiana, decreasing cloudiness. In the far south, some clouds and lingering showers in the morning. Highs from 55 in far northwest Illinois to 67 in the south, 63 in sunshine in Champaign-Urbana. For tonight, clear to partly cloudy, lows from 35 degrees in far northwest Illinois to 45 far south, 40 in Champaign-Urbana. And for tomorrow, a mix of clouds and sun with a few widely scattered showers possible in Illinois and western Indiana during the afternoon and evening. The highs from 53 in northwest Illinois to 65 in the south. Tomorrow's high in Champaign-Urbana, only 58 degrees. For tomorrow night, mostly cloudy early, then clearing with scattered frost possible toward a daybreak on Saturday, the low 38. Saturday, sunny and 62. Sunday, sunny and breezy with a high back up to 72. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Thursday, October 16th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, Agricultural Programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.